the toad. Waiting, wondering is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Get me up to be the biggest little flirt. Well, I might have...
Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Shame-Free Zone again. This is Veronica Monet, your host, and I'm very excited about tonight's topic. I don't know if you've been following along here the last couple of months, but I have developed a newfound interest in birth. And I've been really fascinated to find how birth and sexuality and gender, male-female relationships, spirituality, orgasms, all of these things intersect with the birth in ways that I frankly never knew. So I'm sharing that fascination with you, my listeners, and tonight my guest is Janelle Martin. Now, she calls herself the baby keeper, and I just love the sound of that, but I don't actually know what a baby keeper is. I wouldn't know if that was somebody that was babysitting or whatever. So she explains that a baby keeper is one who keeps the soul's journey into this physical world as the focus of the baby's birth. And as you get to know her tonight, you're going to see that her focus is a very loving focus towards the baby. But it's not just the baby. I mean, she's looking at both parents and the baby very much as a unit. And we're going to be talking tonight about a documentary that she's working on called The Other Side of the Glass. Now, if you're following me on Facebook and Twitter like a lot of people are, you know that I've already posted that link for you. But if you aren't and you're just tuning in, you can go to theothersideoftheglass.com. So that's www.theothersideoftheglass, all one word, small letters, .com, and actually watch a video. It's a short one, but it'll introduce you to her topic. Her focus of late has been very much on empowering fathers during the birth process. So without a lot of other ado, I'm going to welcome Janelle to the show and give you a chance to get to know her in this very important topic. Janelle, welcome to the Shame-Free Zone.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure and an honor to have you on the show. Did you want to tell our listeners a little bit about how you came up with the term the baby keeper?
It's something that just sort of evolved over time. I'm a birth trauma therapist, and before that I worked in traditional areas, and I kept questioning, why are we the way we are? Why is it, in spite of all the programs and therapies for us out there, we can't seem to really find the intimacy that we look for? And that discovery happened in my own search for my own search, but as a professional, too. I kept going backwards farther and farther to see, you know, when does this start? And as a birth trauma therapist, I began to see that that actually we come in as a soul with an agenda and with a plan for our lives, and that it does include birth. But this is the beginning of who we are, and it's the foundation for who we are, so that it's really important for us not to look so much at all the issues and problems that we're always trying to solve, but for those of us who are here now to look backwards and see what can we do to create really healthy, harmonious, happy human beings when they're coming in at this really important time. So it sort of developed, and there's a woman who's the birth keeper, who is now deceased, her name is Denise Bavardi Baker. She was a very, very profound woman, and she coined the phrase birth keeper. And I think that had a lot to do. That was a seed for me as I began to look at babies as souls and look at people as souls. I sort of took that name and made a baby keeper.
It has a beautiful ring to it, and I know that you certainly live up to that. What about this birth trauma? Now, what is birth trauma?
It's the experience that the baby has at birth. That's a challenging question to answer very simply. The thing is like birth is a very profound experience, and it's, you know, we all know that it's sometimes it doesn't seem logical that something the size of a watermelon will come out of something the size of a lemon. And that in itself is, has to be challenging, but it's also natural. There's a lot of processes that go on, the squeezing, the pressure, that are really important for all sorts of neurological and physiological development. But, I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry.
Well, okay.
Oh, the birth trauma.
What is birth trauma?
Well, 90% of us, I would say, are extremely, extremely violated and traumatized at birth. And the thing is like our culture doesn't even get it because we have this collective belief or disbelief that a baby doesn't feel, a baby doesn't remember, a baby's not present. And it's really crazy because anybody who has a child out there, anybody who works with babies, anybody who's been at their baby's birth, I mean, you look at this being and you see that it's a fully present, aware, sentient being. It responds to the mother's voice. The baby will look to find the mother's voice or the father's voice. The baby is taking in the world. They are responding. They're sensory beings, and what I found working with babies is that in therapeutic processes is that this baby, a newborn baby, to me is just like the most awe-inspiring being on the planet. I can make eye contact with a newborn baby, and I feel like I'm lost into the universe because they're so present. They're so real, so sentient and sensitive. And it's almost the most sensitive, the most spiritual, the most real that will ever be in our life because from that moment, the moment that we leave our mother's body, we're greeted with light and sound, and the people in the room are often strangers, and they're often people that have their own issues. They hate their job. They hate the system. They may love babies and birth, but their day-to-day hate their work. This is, for them, it's an assembly line. Basically, they forget that we're souls, that we're human beings, and so they will take the baby and immediately start scrubbing the baby's face and putting things in the baby's mouth and other orifices, and then they take the baby away, they cut the baby's umbilical cord, they separate the mother and the baby before the baby even has a full transfusion of blood. They take the baby away to weigh the baby, put ointment in the eyes, give the baby shots. This is all trauma. Once you realize that a baby is a fully sensitive being, you can't see it differently anymore. That baby is experiencing this profound change from the womb to this world. And for most of us, it was very traumatic. I mean, in my era, I'm 53, you know, I was born by forceps. And, you know, I was in my 40s before I did my birth trauma work, and it was very joyful for me almost to find out that's why I'm this way. That's why I have this issue. That's why I look for pressure in my life. I find people who are going to be forceful so that I can meet that, have that kind of force to meet. That's the dynamic of forceps. And like our society, we don't even think about that, but you know, only 6% of births, I think, are at home where you don't have all these interventions, where midwives are more aware of being gentle and kind, and they're very committed to the mother and the baby being connected and staying connected. So we have 95% of our population is tragically wounded in the very first seconds and moments of their life. And one of the biggest ones, aside from the physical stuff, is that they're separated from the mother. The mother is our core relationship for life. It creates a template for our relationships. So for males and females, that separation from the mother is imprinted in the brain. My mother's not here. My mother betrayed me. My mother was knocked out. My mother wanted me, but she couldn't get to me. People wouldn't let her get to me. That's, all of that stuff is tragic. And that's birth trauma. And so it's, you know, I think that every single person, even home birth, I work with parents after a home birth to process what happened. Because every one of us, as a baby, experienced that journey, and nobody has ever acknowledged our journey. So that's a key part of the therapy, is that the baby gets to tell their story. You know, if anybody's been around a mother who's given birth, they know that she tells her story. And if you get a couple of women together, and one of them's pregnant or had a baby, then the birth stories are just flowing everywhere. And the men just sort of, oh boy, I don't want to hear this again. And even if a man does try to tell his story, what I have found is that the woman's story really overrides, because our society thinks that birth is either the mother's birth or the doctor's birth. And they forget that it's a human being's birth from the mother into the mother's arms, into the father and mother's world.
So what is it that you
and
are...
I'll take a breath.
Janelle, what are you doing to try to awaken men to this role during the birth? Or because, you know, you said most men are saying, I don't want to hear about that. Have you found men to, you know, in the course of doing your documentary, have you found that men have perhaps some unexplored pain around not having really been given a vital role in the birthing process?
Oh, absolutely. I've been across the country from the Carolinas and Georgia to California interviewing fathers here and there, and I learned not to have the mother present because, like I said, the women tell the story. It's their story. And so when the father's there telling the story, he'll look to her and she'll intervene. And so I don't have fathers and mothers together. And I've had fathers tell me how amazing it was for him to just have somebody listen and to tell his story. And I know one father is just a very slow thinker and talker, and his life is very sensitive to that. And, you know, it was just amazing to just sit with him as he tried to find the word to match the feeling that he had, and to be touched to tears, and to cry, without feeling ashamed of it, or being, just having his story overridden by hers, because her, you know, giving birth is a huge story. And so I found that fathers are very, very happy to just tell their story. In fact, I had one father who had a hospital birth. His picture actually is on the website. His first one was in the hospital, and he's holding the baby behind the glass. But the other three were unassisted births, and he, you know, I have 2 hours of tape because I got to hear about each of those births and his experience with each of those births. And, you know,
it almost sounds as if this was the first time he was actually getting to tell the story.
Yeah, and I think he, you know, they are in a, the last three were unassisted, and I think maybe they have a different story because they don't have the trauma. They didn't have their relationship under the magnifying glass and all these strangers doing things, and strangers weren't doing things to his wife that he couldn't control with the others. But yeah, even for him to sit down and to be able to tell the whole story from beginning to end with somebody like myself who really wants to hear it, and I have a heart for the man, you know, in the birth. So yeah, it's been really, really powerful for them.
It seems that one of the things that you have talked about quite a bit, Janelle, is the idea that the man's role, and again, not necessarily in context of an ongoing relationship, but at least when it comes to the idea of bringing a baby into the world, that you see the man's role as being that of protector, and that the way our current system is set up, the man is not given a role. He's completely extirpated from the family scenario. It's like, you know, there's the mother, like you said, and the doctor. And the doctor is a man a lot of times, not always, but, you know, and I'm sure less and less all the time nowadays. But traditionally, when this whole system was set up, the doctor was only male.
Traditionally, the doctor doesn't show up until the very end. So in most births, it's actually a nurse who's monitoring things. So it's actually a nurse who's usurping the power of the father. It's a woman.
Oh, okay.
Interfering. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, whether it's a female or male doctor, they often aren't there until the very end.
Okay. So basically men are shunted away from this. Do you think was that way before we had hospital births? Do you think it was that way when the midwives were birthing babies at home?
You know, according to what I know of history from people who study that, no, it was not like that. And there are stereotypes, like they would send the father to boil water to keep, now we say that's to keep him busy. But I don't really know how that went, and I wish I could go back in time and know exactly how it was, because I'm very interested in the history of fathers in the whole birth process. But what I do know is that fathers have, men have, and even in, say, a lesbian relationship, the partner will have this sense of wanting to protect the mother. That's a natural role.
Uh-huh.
And I think when midwives attended most of the births, I think the father or the partner had a role, and it wasn't necessarily to protect. At some points, it probably was. I mean, animals do that in the wild. I've seen that myself, like a cow giving birth and then others standing around. The other females will kind of gather around at a distance and protect. A mother cat will go. She goes off by herself and hides, and you can't find her till you hear the meows. But a lot of animals will naturally do that. And what I have noticed observing fathers at home birth is that after everything has settled and the baby's in the mother's arms at the breast, the father is going out. He's starting to cook dinner, fix food. It's almost universal. The fathers want to take care of the food and feed the mother. And they will kind of circle around, come back, check it out. Looks like mom, baby, the women are taking care of her. He's back out. He's cleaning up. He's doing the laundry, cooking. Circles back in. Yep, everything's fine. He'll do that for a little bit. But then eventually, they sort of all end up in bed together, kind of sleeping and snuggling and holding a baby and bonding, which is a drastically different picture from what you see in the hospital. Fathers, you know, and I want to make a point to the trailer that you directed people to, and it looks like I'm advocating the film is going to be about fathers learning how to protect their babies in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a part to that, because most babies are born in the hospital, so men do need to know the real science and how they can advocate for their babies.
Right.
But there's a bigger piece to that, and that there's a real issue around a society where a man and a woman have to prepare to birth their baby as if they're going to war. They have to, anybody who wants to have a natural birth, they don't want the interventions that we know are not necessary that interfere with birth and create more interventions, which create C-sections, which create separation of the mother and baby. When a couple knows that, they have to prepare to fight for themselves in the hospital. And that is not normal. That is not right, when you have to be armed to fight when you go to the hospital, instead of embracing this wonderful, beautiful experience where you are welcoming in the fruit of your loin, the fruit of your love. This is the expression of your sperm, and you have to prepare to fight to protect them. That's not normal. So ultimately, my film, there are four parts, and one of the parts is going to be about confronting the medical establishment to say that, no, you be the one to protect the family. A father will experience one of my parts is called his moment of awe. And this is something that is a huge, huge loss for men, and they don't even know it. They don't have the language yet. Nobody has named it, but he is missing out on this moment. And fathers have told me this, that seeing a baby, their baby for the first time, especially their first baby, it is mind-blowing. And I call it his moment of awe, when he needs to be protected. This moment of his baby coming out, and coming back up to the mother and being in the mother's arms and then him enveloping them in his arms, that needs to be protected, and it's society that needs to protect them, and it's the doctors and nurses who need to be, they need to stop, or they need to be forced to stop the unnecessary traumatizing interventions that they do that disrupt that moment. And most of them, probably 80%, 90% of them, because they say that only like 10% of births are high risk and need intervention, like 80% of the births, they don't need most of that intervention that they get that disrupts. So the father is like, he has his emotional, his hormonal reactions to birth. He's not a blob either. He's a human being. He has emotional and hormonal physiological reactions that mirror the mother giving birth.
And I have to say, it's always fascinated me about the scientific and the medical community seems to have this stance that, women and men don't experience things the same, and babies don't feel things the way people do, as if babies and people weren't the same thing. And then the same thing with animals, of course. Animals don't feel pain like we do. They don't have emotions like we do. And, you know, that's been going on and on and on. And frankly, I find the whole line of unlogic, it's a very illogical thought process that very otherwise intelligent people seem to be given to. And it starts in the roots of racism, because really this is how we are able to be racist, is we say those people aren't like us. And you know, aside from the fact that, I mean, you know, this is a very, very sad thing, it just totally defies logic. And in fact, the truth is the exact opposite. So, you know, like when I'm working with my dogs, training my dogs, it's all about emotion. That's all there is, because there's very little that's about logic or analysis or philosophy or politics. It's just emotion. It's sad, happy, sad, happy, afraid, sad, happy. I mean, it's just feel. And, you know, I think it's just insane that really our culture has gone out of its way to try to turn us into machines. All of our systems are set up to basically, you know, separate us from our feelings. And I really think this is because it allows, you know, the people that are in charge to control us better. And, of course, you know, who are those people that are in charge? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe Goldman Sachs.
It is.
You know, Blackwater. There are definitely some people out there that are making a lot of money making us into machines. Or trying.
Yeah, ultimately it is that, but then the they is the person, the one-to-one person. It's the doctor who chooses to practice in a way that he knows is not scientific, and he chooses to say, oh, it doesn't matter, because I don't want it to matter, because most likely I've been harmed, and if I can't feel my emotions, you know, how am I going to know that I'm hurting someone else if I can't even acknowledge my own wounding?
And that is the most disturbing thing about getting in touch with reality, of course, is this wall that has been holding back all of these feelings that we're all having because we're all abused or traumatized in some way. The video that you showed me some time ago about a birth that, you know, was the baby, they were sticking their fingers inside the baby's mouth, and I told you it looked like rape to me.
It is rape.
Is that video still available, or can we show that? Because I know you had some problems with copyright there.
No, that piece of the video is the piece that you're talking about, as it is right now, includes parts that I'm not able to show right now.
Okay.
Because of a legal issue.
Yeah, I'm so sorry that you're having so much difficulty with that. One of the things that's coming up for you, of course, is that you are introducing a paradigm shift, and so the people around you are being incredibly resistant and even punitive about that information coming to the surface and giving people a chance to, like, actually experience this. Is that true?
Yeah, and I'm prepared, and I'm at a point where I can talk more about that, and I do think it's very, very relevant if you wanted to get into that.
Well, I don't want to spend the entire next half hour talking about it, but certainly let's address it for at least 5 minutes.
Well, it's a bigger story than for 5 minutes, but yes, that piece of footage, there's a piece of footage that will be used, and this particular baby that you're talking about is my grandson, and he was taken away from his mother as she cried no. She told him that she wanted to have the baby in her arms. She wanted the cord left intact. She wanted to do the self-attachment call, which is what happens. It's a physiological response, and we just don't know it because birth has been so disrupted. But what happens is the baby comes out, and most likely the mother reaches down, pulls the baby out, the baby goes on her belly, and she's just in this pure hormonal state, and she just engages with her baby, and it's an amazing moment. But in about 20 minutes, the baby will start grunting and moving, and the baby will crawl to the breast and attach him or herself to the mother's breast, and that completes a neurological circuit in the brain. It's called self-attachment or the breast call. So she wanted that.
Do you call that the breast
somebody.
Call?
Crawl. What
the breast
call.
The breast crawl.
The crawl. Yeah,
wow.
And when babies attach, because that's what animals do.
I watched kittens do it.
Birth is meant to happen in a way that if something happens to the mother, the baby can still survive. Little puppies will find the breast. Little kitties will find the breast. Little babies will find the breast. In India, there's an area in India where UNICEF is actually doing this, because when the baby attaches to the breast on their own, women and babies are very unlikely to have breastfeeding problems. And so it's increasing infant mortality rates when the baby is breastfed in a third world country.
Really?
My daughter wanted to have all of that, and she wanted the baby in her arms and everybody to be quiet for an hour, because from my work we know that the first hour is the golden hour.
I'm actually looking at a website called breastcrawl.org. And it's actually saying exactly what you say. UNICEF, WHO, and WABA, along with the scientific community, strongly recommend initiating breastfeeding within an hour of birth. Evidence shows that early initiation can prevent 22% of all deaths among babies below 1 month in developing countries. Well, why do they go
and that's not even talking about the emotional, psychological, spiritual aspect of this mother and baby.
Well, you know, again, it's never about our feelings. It's always about whether, and, you know, the bottom line, we don't want to lose a resource like the baby.
Yeah.
A
new consumer.
Don't you also find it disturbing that they throw in their developing countries? For God's sake, the United States leads in infant mortality.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, and, that information's out there everywhere you turn, and it's not getting in some places. In some people, it's just not entering their consciousness that oh, my God, that could be me. I could be one of the women or my wife could be one of the women that's three times more likely to die from a cesarean when we have up to 50% cesareans, when worldwide it's recommended that we have 10%. 40-plus% of the cesareans in this country are not necessary. It's a major abdominal surgery. The baby's more likely to die. The baby has long-term consequences. The mother's more likely to die. But now we're seeing as, oh, that's normal. That's where the mind is brainwashing. The information is out there.
Well,
do you want me to continue?
It's interesting because I'm right now I'm on Twitter and I am sending people over to look at this video because I'm over here on Breast Crawl. They've actually got a video showing the baby crawling from the mother's belly to her breast. And even as I'm writing it, I'm aware of the fact that on some subconscious level, I am violating a taboo that I don't even understand.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean that it feels like showing this video is somehow or another going to offend people. And that's what I mean, like, subconsciously, like, you're not really cognizant of the fact that there are any rules out there. Like, a lot of women don't realize that their lives are really constrained by the fear. Fear, you know, I can't go out alone, I got to have somebody with me, or I can't go out after a certain time, or I can't go to that part of town. And then if you're in relationship with a man, then you find out that he's having a different life because there are certain places and times of days and whatever where he just goes by himself and with impunity and never worries about it. By the same token, I'm just saying that, you know, exposing the information about orgasms at birth, babies crawling from the mother's belly to the mother's breast, even showing a woman nursing a baby, people are highly offended.
Those are babies that didn't get the breast.
That could be.
I
think we have a lot of Victorian values in this country because I checked into a San Francisco hotel one day and found a Vanity Fair from Italy. And I saved the cover to it because it was this beautiful picture of a woman, a young, beautiful woman, with a very obviously milk-laden breast that was breastfeeding a baby. And she was on the cover of Vanity Fair, which is, you know, kind of not cosmopolitan. It's just like, you know, your average housewife kind of magazine. And I thought to myself, you'll never see that on an American magazine cover. We would rather show somebody in a thong where you could see practically everything they've got, or show Britney Spears, you know, crotch as she gets out of a limo on the cover of magazine, then let you see a baby breastfeeding.
Well, I know you can go to CompleteMother.com, Complete Mother Magazine, and you can see breastfeeding on the cover. And that's C-O-M-P-L-E-A-T, CompleteMother.com.
That's excellent. I'm glad that it's out there, but I wish it was more mainstream to where people weren't complaining about breastfeeding on airplanes, you know.
Yeah,
I guess you know that happens.
There was a woman who got
I don't know if she actually got kicked off the airplane, but they threatened to kick her off the airplane because she was breastfeeding.
Yeah, you know, and that is changing, and it is changing attitudes, and it's a very, very slow process to change attitude. But, you know, I just read a piece of research, not the whole thing, but the gist of it is that if fathers have, I think it might have only been an hour of training about breastfeeding before the baby's born, the success rates of the mother and baby are just amazing.
Say that again.
Hour. If men have a breastfeeding course, and I'm talking about independent lactation consultants and childbirth educators, the ones at the hospital, they bless them, they do the best that they can, but they have to teach what the system wants the parents to know.
Right.
So if a father, and in your area, there's a woman who's just phenomenal lactation consultant, and she does work for the hospital, but they are trailblazers. But if a father has training and education with a lactation consultant or childbirth educator about breastfeeding, it increases the success rates of breastfeeding for the mother and the baby.
Do we have any idea why that's the case?
Because the mother has support and the father understands what's going on. Many times fathers are very, the word is jealous. because breastfeeding is very time consuming. We, you know, the old standard is the baby eats every 4 hours, but if you log what you eat and drink every day, most of us don't go 20 minutes without a drink or a piece of candy or gum or something. And a baby can't do that either. The baby needs to nurse on demand. So a baby can be at the breast for hours and hours, and the mother and the baby are just so engrossed. And that's hard for men, and it's especially hard for men who weren't breastfed. And so if he understands that, and if he understands that he has a role and that he can even, I remember when I was breastfeeding Mariah and I started, I would be asleep and her dad would get up and actually attach her and hold her while I slept.
Oh, wow.
You know, there are all kinds of things that a man can do once he knows it's okay, because men have been excluded from the whole process. Men were thrown into the hospital in the 70s, and it was a fight to get in there, but they wanted to protect the people who pushed that really wanted fathers in there, and a lot of it was to protect the mother and the baby, but there was no thought really given to how should we do this and what are the needs of the father. And, you know, while we're on this topic, I want to say, and I don't really want to negate anything that any man out there who's listening might have experienced, but I really question this new thing in the medical system where fathers, their big honor is that they get to cut the cord, and usually it's cut immediately, and the baby's cord needs to stay intact until the placenta, at least until the placenta delivers, but they're at the hospital, they're cutting it immediately, and sometimes they'll wait up to 3 minutes, but you have to fight for it, and it is wrong, it's wrong, wrong, wrong to cut the cord. But they're, in that, you know, I was talking about the father's moment when he sees his baby. Fathers told me, you know, it didn't really seem real sometimes, and men are visual, and they know there's a baby, they see it, it's kicking, and they don't have a relationship with the baby like the mother does already. You know, they sort of have this separate life from the baby. But in that moment when they see their baby come out, that is so critical. And what happens is the doctor's got the baby flailing it around like a football, grabbing scissors with one hand and clamps, and then the honor is for the father to cut the cord. And I'm challenging people to think about that and go, whoa, the father at a very traumatizing moment is the one who's separating the baby and the mother. And so you look at all of these things. Fathers need to be educated. Like, learn about
what
the cord.
Would you recommend
learn about suctioning. Learn about breastfeeding. Go to the classes and find out what you need to know so that you can be empowered.
I think that sounds excellent. You know what? Rather than having the father cut the umbilical cord, who would you have cut it?
Well, this goes back to my belief in the physiological natural birth, and that I believe now that the cord needs to stay and the placenta needs to stay attached until the baby's body releases it. And we can get into a whole conversation. But
before the baby what? Until the baby what?
Until the baby's body releases the placenta. The placenta is the other in the womb. But I think that we need to trust the mother, and the mother needs to say, I think the baby and I are ready to be separated. I think the it's okay now to separate the baby and the placenta. And that's
okay,
that's from her communication. And she decides, this is the baby's birth. It's the baby's birth. It's the baby's birth. My birth was my birth. It wasn't my mom's. It wasn't my doctor's. Your birth was your birth. If my mother had been exposed to what we know now, what I know, she would have been communicating fully with me in the womb, with me and my dad. They would have been very prepared, very differently. My mother would have said, you just let me know when it's okay to cut the cord, and she will know. She will know. Babies, that's part of the therapy I do. The babies will be doing these movements and sounds, and when we stay in this really sacred place, the mother will go, oh, I know what that is. But if women are taught that from even before conception, but certainly during pregnancy and labor and birth, that my body knows how to birth this baby. My body built this baby with no conscious, no consciousness. I didn't have to remember, oh, day 18, this is the day I start the heart. Oh, day 42, oh, this is the day I start the nervous system. Because if it was left up to our conscious mind, what messes we would make. No, my body built four human beings, and I didn't have to do anything but take care of myself. Well, my body still knows how to do that at birth, and my body mm-hmm. still knows how to do that 5 minutes after, an hour after. My body still knows how to do that with adult children. I still have a knowing. I think about my son, I'll call him. This happened twice in the last, he just started a new job in the last few months, but I call him and I go, where are you? He goes, who have you been talking to? I go, I just had a feeling that you were traveling. He goes, I'm at Denver Airport. You know, and the next week I call him, where are you? And he goes, oh, I'm in Florida. You know, and, you know, it creeps him out sometimes, but it's just like a mother's knowing. You know, mm-hmm. we never lose that. And fathers don't have that, but they can. They can have it, not to that degree maybe, but they have an equally special relationship with their child that we don't even know yet. That's what's exciting to me is my film has developed from what I thought it was to what it is now and about fathers. Mm-hmm. We don't even know the potential for the father-child relationship, and it will impact everything that upsets men, the court process, child support, visitation. See, I mean, even in an intact family, just feeling alienated and like, I don't belong, I'm just the ATM machine, you know?
I think a lot of guys feel that way. Going over to your website now, at the other side of the glass, I'm a little confused, and I'm thinking that if my listeners have wandered over there, and again, that website is theothersideoftheglassthefilm.blogspot.com, or you can just put in theothersideoftheglass.com, and
right.
it'll take you there.
I'm an independent filmmaker. I'm totally self-funded. I am living on beans, and I don't have a website up yet. So I'm just
yes, I understand that, and you've actually got a place here where people can donate $15 or more.
So if you feel motivated to do that after
watching the documentary, please do click on donate.
Well, $15 or more. $15 is you'll get a copy of part one when it comes out, and as soon as I'm done with it, of course, the price will go up. And then there's, like, other increments, like $40, and a lot of people are...
I see this. Donors over 40 will be eligible for a discount on bulk orders, over $100 eligible for additional
yeah.
discount, website
yeah.
listed in the credits. So let's go over to...
Donate $5,000, you know, that's great.
Okay, Janelle, I want to get to some of the comments that are here. Janelle, I find some of the questions and comments here a little disturbing and confusing, so I'm hoping you can explain to the listeners what is going on here. These are people's responses to the film, because there's some things in here that are talking about men not being as good as women.
Where are you?
I'm over on the other side of the glass.com.
Oh, I'm not sure what you're talking about here.
There's a bunch of comments listed here underneath.
Underneath?
Yes, underneath the film, people have left comments.
Oh, that's just, that was a posting that I did on Friday, January 8th. Is that what you're talking about? It's a conversation. It was a conversation on
yes,
my
Friday,
Facebook.
January 8th. It's a tragedy for all
yeah,
women who are missing out on natural men. I guess here you're talking actually about circumcision?
No. No, that's just a conversation, and I just use it as an example of how angry women are, how wounded women are.
Ah, good. Okay, see, that's not self-evident from this website, in my opinion. But I was hoping that that's what this was supposed to be an example of.
Under normal circumstances, somebody would read, it's a posting that I did on Friday, January 8th, so that they would read the whole thing.
Then right. It says the comments that follow speak to the part 4 of my film that is about healing the masculine so we can heal the feminine and the relationship between them. I shared the conversation with my friend and co-host and fellow Robert Roser, an intact activist, Rich. He emailed me back. It's a tragedy for all women who are missing out on natural men. I don't know if you'll want to maybe make that a little clearer here, but yes, they are very angry. They're talking about how they've got a Y chromosome, and it's only a partial X chromosome.
If you go down and you read my comments, it'll make sense. I think probably since you're on the air and you're just kind of quickly scanning it, but no, it's a blog entry that sort of tells the story of an example of how angry women are. And part 4 of my film eventually will be about healing the masculine, healing the male child from birth through the experience that I've talked about, the birth trauma, the circumcision, the separation from his mother, because this is the root of his pain, and it's getting acted out in society.
Do you have any theories about why the women are so angry? Do you know why the women are so angry?
Well, I think the female version of the wounding is having your body mutilated, giving birth, having your body controlled and dictated to you by a male patriarchal system. I think obstetrics, the fight between midwives, is midwifery better, are doctors better? I mean, to me that's just a reflection of this fight between men and women. And it happens on the system level where the hospital's better, the doctors are better, no, midwives are better. It's another version of the male-female fight, and it happens every day in our homes, and husband and wife are fighting, and the children are there, and women, my film is going to show how beautiful and how wonderful this little male baby boy is, and how we can treat him differently so that he grows up to be a man who is able to be connected to other people. Men are hungry for intimacy, you know that. You know, and what happens is this: women are still wounded at birth, and men are still wounded at birth, and they go home and they don't even know. Like the man who severs the baby from the mother, they will go, and I got to cut the cord. You know, like it's a big badge of honor. But what's happened is, like, dude, you know, you just separated the mother and the baby, and on some level, the mother feels this as a deep betrayal. And she it's not named. Our society totally ignores the experience of birth so that we're all like the walking wounded. And you say, oh, I have birth trauma and it affected me really profoundly. And people are like, oh, God, you're so woo-woo, new age. You know, it is not. It is scientific. If you want to get into it, the brain research and all that supports it. But the thing is it creates a wedge between men and women. And you know, and that's the story that we started to get into with that footage, is that, you know, the father was not able to stop these people from doing every single thing that I listed that the mother wanted. He was not able to stop it. I was not able to stop it. And she is very angry on some level that she doesn't even know, and she's taking it out on that man, and she'll take it out on any man. And it's just this back and forth craziness. And at some point we have to say, let's stop it. I'm going to heal my birth. I'm going to find out what happened to me and how that impacted me. And I'm going to be a part, I'm going to become a baby keeper. I'm going to do what I can to make sure that no other baby boy comes into this world separated from his mother, and where the intimacy bond is broken, and where he is physically violated, his orifices are poked and prodded, and his penis is cut off, and the most sensitive part of his penis is cut off, and he's separated and crying, and, you know, we can all do that. We can make sure from this day, every baby boy that comes into this planet can be treated like he is the most amazing soul, the most amazing being, because they are.
And, of course, you're talking specifically about circumcision there, but the birth trauma can happen.
No, I'm not talking yes. circumcision. That's just a part of it.
You do mean to include female babies. We don't want any baby girls to be traumatized at birth either.
Oh, you know what? Women get all the attention. Baby girls get all the attention. I mean, I'm being facetious now, but, like, no, tonight we're talking about men. You will find all kinds of people to talk about women at birth and girls. And I'm talking about the male child that needs to be loved and seen as this amazing, sacred being that he is, and to be cared for and nurtured and supported and not violated.
Yeah. I agree with you, except for one thing, which is that you yourself said you suffered birth trauma, so, and you're female, so I'm assuming there's lots of female listeners out there that also have had birth trauma and probably need to heal that, and
well,
we don't want any baby girls to be born with birth trauma either.
But in the process of doing that, if we were to say that we're not going to do that for this baby boy, we're going to do it for baby girls. And the thing is if we're protecting a baby or a girl child, we are also protecting birth. Yes, I was drugged with drugs that made me hallucinate. I was tied down. My mother was not allowed in there, and my husband, who was only 18, I was 18. The poor man, what could he do? You know, if my son, who was born that way, if we had the attitude that this little baby, if it's a boy or a girl, is going to be treated as if it is the most amazing being on the planet, that it's a sacred being, then they wouldn't have done any of that to me. They wouldn't have done any of that to me. They wouldn't have done any of that to my husband. They wouldn't have done any of that to my baby. And we would have had a connection. We wouldn't have had the decades of anger and divorces and child issues and all that typical stuff that happens in our society, and we don't even know where it starts.
Yeah.
Well, we do.
Absolutely.
We do know where it.
Absolutely. So, Janelle, I really want to thank you for joining me in the shame-free zone. And for the listeners out there, I just want to, add one little thing here. I you're listening in here. You may or may not give a lot of credence to this, and you may even wonder what Janelle's talking about, do all what. But I would invite you to, explore the idea a little bit further online about birth trauma, because I really didn't put a lot of stock in it myself, and I'm beginning to start to realize that it probably does have a really huge impact on us. It is, after all, the first thing that happens to us as we come to planet Earth. And the way that it's done right now, most of us don't even want to go to the hospital when we're sick. So can you imagine the first place you are is in a hospital. That's where the vast majority of people are born. I can't help but sometimes wonder, one of the reasons that maybe we all hate hospitals is because that is where we started life too. So, there has to be some kind of changes that take place. If we're going to continue to birth babies in hospitals, then we got to change the way they're being born there. Wouldn't you agree, Janelle?
Absolutely. There's a great website, birthpsychology.com, that is the Association for Pre and Perinatal Psychology and Health, which is a great place to start.
Hold on a second. I want to make sure I put that out to everybody on Twitter. So that's called birthpsychology.com. Birthpsychology.com. I'll put that out on Twitter too. Please check that out if you want to look into your own birth. Yes, it may have happened years and years ago, but that doesn't mean it's not having an effect on your life. Janelle, I want to wish you well with your documentary. And again, if people would like to help support Janelle in making this documentary a possibility, then please think about going over to, you want to give us that website again, Janelle?
TheOthersideOfTheGlass.com.
Yep, click on the little button that says donate, and you can give $15 or more if you got it. That'd be awesome. I know I want to see it when it comes out.
I'm hoping that part one will be done very soon, and then it's going to be very exciting. It's mostly father's voices.
Awesome, awesome. You've also got your own radio show, and I think you mostly just talk about birth and circumcision, right?
We talk about the impact of the prenatal and birth period on our mind, and it's called Thought Crime Radio. This is the period of time when we are taken over by the system. If you think about
I'm out of time, but give the listeners the directions on how to get to your program so that they can tune in and get all the information that they're going to want.
ThoughtCrimeRadio.blogspot.com.
And you have archives up there, or do they need to tune in on a certain day?
Yes, they're it's live on Mondays at 5 p.m. Central Time, but on the website we have podcast for every show since August when we started.
Awesome. Awesome. Janelle, thank you so much. Best of luck to you, and
thank you for
working so passionately and so hard to make such a positive difference in the world.
Aw, thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. We'll have you on again. Thank you so much, and good night.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with me. Sering kesepian.